today, Epoch Sex Space. We're just gonna. I just hit start, so if you're listening to the recording, as I say every week, just skip a few minutes ahead at a time until you start hearing the conversation become fluid. And yeah, thanks for listening. So I'm gonna go mute while I kind of get this ro rolling and all of that, and we'll be getting going here shortly. Hello, Sam. I
Hey,
just invited you up. Hey, man, how are you doing?
doing pretty well. Can't complain.
Good, good. Good. I'm gonna have to definitely cut this off on time tonight at here in an hour, because just about 2 minutes ago found out that I have a water leak at the barn. So gonna
Oh
have to,
no.
yeah. But it's like one of those spigots you see coming out of the ground sometimes. So I'm gonna have to just probably dig it up and replace the fitting on it. But
Okay.
yeah, it's always something.
Always something.
Yeah,
Yeah, no worries.
I think I tweeted this out earlier. I'm gonna go ahead
Oh,
and do
yeah,
that
I
right
forgot.
now. I think I did that, but let me just see. Oh, we have a third person in here. It's just me. Just my other
No. Who's that person? Ban.
account.
Welcome to Driving Tips.
Yeah, driving tips. Hello. I just got this all tweeted out, so yeah. Give it another couple of minutes. And driving, you're welcome to hop up if you'd like to, sir. We'll get going here in a moment so that we get done on time so I can go do some of that barn work on the plumbing. Yeah. Everything was going really smooth until that happened.
Yeah, and you said it's just a small leak. I assume it's something that seems like
What's the
easily accessible. to fix?
Yeah, I just have to dig up, like, there's a crush run rock around it, so, and it's only about like a foot deep, so I just need to dig that up around it and figure out where it busted at. But it probably, so like the, you know, it's like a 4 foot tall spigot that comes out of the ground, and at the bottom there's an elbow, and then from that elbow it, there's a shark bite fitting that connects to the plumbing.
Oh, okay.
So it's probably that. Probably that. Yeah. Driving, how are you doing?
Up, boys? All good over
Hello.
here. Raining really hard, so just trying to
Oh,
stay dry.
no.
It's a good day, good weekend. Excited for your digest and the encryption here. So just decided to
Yeah.
jump up and break the algo a little bit, and hopefully some
Yeah.
Cardano folks and others will join.
That would be good.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it.
Raining,
Give it
huh?
a.
Yeah, no, it's pouring. The street is flooding. Everything's flooding. T-storm.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, so what are we into today? We doing ellipticals or what? There's so many types, so I don't know which way you guys are going. I'm just gonna get into the thread and tune in.
Yeah, well, it's going to be so this one's going to be kind of the high level, depending on if Macaroni wants to go more in depth in it, but at least for the most part, this will be just kind of the high level talk about it, difference between symmetric, asymmetric, couple examples, discuss maybe what each one is for, like what each one is most commonly or I would almost say what is most appropriately used for, and then it's mostly going to be high level, I think.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, today's just kind of an intro and kind of a broad high level, like, hey, these are some terms and kind of how it works at a an analogy level, and then in the future, and it's kind of the idea, right? Take this topic today, and then in the future, in the couple of months coming up, you know, sprinkle in topics. So, you know, sprinkling in a topic about digging into hashing functions, and then we'll go into some, you know, real world applications of encryption, you know, things like removable media operating systems, different operating systems, so forth, blockchain, things like that. So yeah, it's kind of like an, and you know, the goal isn't to really train or teach people that are already development or technically minded, just to give this series, if you will, is to just kind of give the broader audience and community an understanding of how encryption is actually being applied in their daily activity, mostly transparent to them, right? Unless you're a developer or something like that, of course, it's, you know, you're actively using it, but you know, every user out there though is using it, just you know, hands off, right? So yeah. Sorry, I'm just a little mentally distracted. Just telling Sam that just found out I had a water leak at the barn, so when the space is over, I have to go figure that out. But yeah, we got Bone Pool, and thank you for joining, sir. And oh, and the Cardano Race team in here. Okay. If you guys want to hop up, I really don't ever, you know, not most of the time, I don't just invite you. But if you want to hop up, just request, and we'll just bring you on up. I just don't, most of the time, don't generally try to impose if you don't want to. We got one request, Bone Pool, so we'll allow him up here. But yeah, okay, so without further ado, because like I said, without beating a dead horse here, I don't have a huge amount of time this evening, but I'm going to pull up the slides here that Sam created for us, and we'll get going. We'll get going here. Let's see here. Here they are. So again, I'll just start off with kind of a broad set of definitions of encryption. And again, this is very high level. So if you already understand encryption, you know, This probably won't be too useful for you, maybe a refresher, if you will. But if you don't have any knowledge of it, then this should kind of give you some kind of a baseline set of knowledge for what encryption is and how it applies to you. So the first thing, I'll start off with the first slide here. What is encryption, right? So I could really sum it up as just very basically, at its core, it's really just taking plain text and converting it into unreadable text or cipher text, right? So if you send Bob or Alice a message or an email or transfer a file or log into an account, many, many different things like that. What's happening is taking that plain text that you are typing or sending, and it's converting it into cipher text, unreadable text, right? And there's a couple of different encryption methods that will actually convert it into ciphertext, and we'll get into that. So this is so it's done by tick and like I guess I've already said this next bullet, right? But it's basically taking different intricate algorithms or mathematical equations, if you will, and scrambling that the input or the text that you're creating. The two major types of encryption we're going to be talking about today, and I slightly alluded to that, is symmetric encryption and asymmetric encryption. Don't worry about the definitions yet. That's further on in the topic. And just like I said at the very beginning, one of the other topics I'll be adding to the series is talking about hashing functions, which is not, and I'm not talking about that here today, just a clarity point, just in case you've ever heard this mixed up. Hashing is related in terms of what it's used for, but it's not the same thing as encryption, right? Encryption is using algorithms, and hashing is a set of functions that are, and they're used for very specific tasks. So that they're definitely different in terms of how they're used and the methods used and all of that good stuff. But we'll get into that later on in the coming weeks or so. So that's the definition of encryption. I'll pause there, see if anybody has any questions, or maybe Sam has a different way of, or different, phrasing to add on to that or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty good. I would say, and we will get into this a little bit more, right, of what hashing is, and it kind of, yeah. Well, we'll get into that deeper later, but yeah, in a way, you can almost think of hashing as like it's most useful for proving that a piece of data is the data that you're saying it is, like for authentication in certain ways, because it gets treated very differently, or it'll totally change the ending hash with any change, which arguably encryption would as well, but it's very lean, and it's very easy to compute. It takes virtually no compute power to do hashing. So it's useful for those kind of efficiencies. Yeah, no, other than that, I mean, nothing too much, other than what you said. I would say let's get into it.
Yeah, okay. We have another requester here. I'll go and allow them up. Oh, Jarhead, welcome to the space, sir. Okay, so yeah, I mean that's a baseline definition of encryption, right, that we just talked about. And unless somebody has a better way, that's basically, I think, the best way we can describe that. But we'll go ahead and just knock out the next slide here, and talk about the purposes of encryption, right? And I'm kind of alluding to a lot of things that all, so I'm kind of repeating myself to some degree. But encryption is used in many facets. Almost everything that you do as an average daily user online, there are definitely situations where it's not used. But for the most part, encryption is basically used in almost everything that you do. Whether that is encrypting your computer and you're logging into it using, BitLocker for Windows, or if you're logging into different accounts, or if you're, I gave some other examples, right? But protecting sensitive data, and we're going through this slide now, verifying authenticity of a file, not the integrity of the file, right? Which that is hashing, and it's a future topic, right? But the authenticity of it, saying, hey, the person that sent it to you is that person. Providing it also provides a means of secure communication. You see me talk about us talk about that in different facets in other spaces, in the past. It provides so it prevents unauthorized access to data. So anybody can attempt to intercept your data, but without that key, they won't be able to decrypt it or access it, right, and read it. It's also used in many elements of blockchain transactions and blocks as well, right? And so, and it's used for it's yeah. Again, that's going to be a completely separate topic that we dig into specifically, right? But and again, really, like I said in the very beginning, this is a very entry level discussion here about encryption, and we'll get into specific use cases and different topics in the following weeks. I mean, so that's the definition and the purposes of encryption. I'll pause there before I move on and see if anybody has anything to ask, share, or add.
No, keep going. Keep going. I was going to comment. I wanted a summary of what encryption was, but you guys did it as I was coming up to speak, so you're good.
Well, it'll only take one quick second. We'll just rehash that. It's no problem, actually. So for the people who already heard it, maybe this will just help it stick a little bit better. But so encryption at a basic level is just taking plain text in any form, whether it is sending a file, social media communication, an email, text messaging, whatever it is. Now, there are caveats to text messaging, and I've talked about that before, but at its basic level, it's taking plain text and converting it into unreadable text, or that's actually called ciphertext, right? So it's taking algorithms, mathematical equations essentially, and there's different forms of them, whether it's using prime numbers or elliptical curves, but it's all mathematical based to scramble the input and convert that into an unreadable form, the output. There are two different types of encryption we're going to talk about here momentarily. That's symmetric encryption and asymmetric encryption. They have two very specific purposes, and they're often used together, and we'll dig into the definitions of those. But yeah, that's the high level of encryption, Jarhead, that we were talking about in the very beginning. But yeah. Okay, so and Sam, you actually helped create this slide, and I like it a lot. Is there anything that we could verbally communicate on this slide, or should we just point people to the slide and move on, for the example?
For the example, sure, yeah, we can try to quickly verbalize it, right? So the way that in this, so the slide, if you're not looking at it or whatever, right, the slide is just a very simplified version of many diagrams or pictures. You know, that you probably have seen or can see if you Google, you know, how encryption works or something, encryption flow. But anyway, yeah, so one person, and in this case, it's really kind of talking about communication, you know, that you're sending an encrypted text. And so you type a message in plain text in whatever medium you're going to use, right? Let's say it's Signal, Messenger or something like that. And you know, so you type it in plain text, and then when you hit send, that application is it's going to do a couple things. One is it's going to negotiate what the key is going to be, the shared key between the two users. Now, if you've already communicated with the other person, you know, previously, then this probably is already known by your device to that relative to that person. But you're going to take that plain text and you're going to send it through an encryption method. So you'll take it and you'll split the message up into multiple parts. You'll take a key and then you'll shuffle all of the text, the plain text, into, you know, multiple times into undecipherable information, hashed different time or passed different times with the key, and with feeder keys, and then that's what actually will be transmitted outside of the application, And so once it leaves the application, it'll leave in this complete jarble form. So even if someone did intercept it, they would get, nothing. And so they would look at it. If they opened the data, the text, right, it would just be a bunch of nonsense. And even for a short message, it could be a whole lot of nonsense, right? It could be much longer than the actual message was. And then it'll navigate through, and then at the end, right, it'll arrive to, and of course this happens super fast, but in most cases, but it'll arrive to the recipient's device, that application with their private key and the previously agreed upon between the two devices, shared key. It will encrypt it, right? It'll decrypt it, so it'll send it back through all of the many different types or times that it gets shuffled, and it'll return back in the plain text that it was sent as, right? So you can read the message or decrypt the data, and that's really kind of how it happens. Symmetric and asymmetric have a little bit different ways of how they do that, but the end result is essentially that way, right? One person takes data and will encrypt it with a key, and then and that renders the data, unreadable. They'll pass that through, some medium, and then when that data arrives, the recipient, be that a person or a service, will decrypt it using a key or pair of keys or something, and then they'll be able to read it. But anybody in between would not. And so anyone who receives the actual encrypted data, they would have to go through great lengths to decrypt it, and that really relies on, or that really depends on which encryption algorithm or standard was being used, the length of the key used to encrypt it, usually measured, well, pretty much always measured in bits. So the larger the key, the harder it would be to decrypt it, because that's really what they're trying to derive through cracking the encryption, is they're trying to derive the key for it. And yeah, so there's a lot of different things that factor into it, but that's pretty much what the slide depicts. And yeah, okay, I'll kind of leave it there. I mean, there's a lot more with, like, how much compute power you have available and everything. And maybe we'll touch on that a little bit more once we get into, like, specifically symmetric versus asymmetric, but I'll go.
Yeah, feel free to add on to that. Yeah, as we get into these different types here, just momentarily. Absolutely. I think that'd be really useful. And Sam has said, everything he said was dead on, and really a really good explanation. Just one minor thing to add on to that, and again, that we might discuss this a little more. Just depends on how far in depth we need to get, and your level of comprehension on it, or your comfortability with it. But elliptical curve algorithms. The links can be shorter but more secure. There's a lot to that. But before Sam and I start talking about the two different types of encryption, I'll pause here and see if anybody, I see Joker just joined too. Thank you, sir, for being here. If anybody not up speaking wants to hop up, and if anybody already speaking has any questions on what we just discussed, before we move on. Or if we're this is like reading a book and we're putting you to sleep is okay too.
I'm just trying to take it in. I'm just, like, say, honestly.
I got you, man. Yeah, and if we need to repeat anything and say it different ways, I'm more than happy to do that. And like I said, when we get into some of the future topics in later weeks and the next month, when we start talking about specific use cases, that might start helping continue paint the picture in a better way of how you're actually using it. But okay, so without further ado, moving on to the two types of encryption. It will probably go back and forth to paint the picture, but starting off with symmetric encryption, and asymmetric is going to be pretty much, well, not an opposite, but very different than what we talk about with symmetric, right? So symmetric encryption, and just like I did with the definition of encryption itself, we'll just do this in a very simple way at first. So symmetric encryption is basically just having one single key, and everybody communicating back and forth needs that key in order to communicate, right? So it's a shared key. And it's used to encrypt and both encrypt and decrypt messages or whatever we are talking about and trying to encrypt. It is technically faster than asymmetric because it's just that one single key. And for those out there curious, there are a lot of symmetric algorithms, but some of the most common ones are AES, or more specifically AES 256. And like Sam talked about earlier, that 256 is the amount of bits used. Then you have TwoFish. TwoFish is its own algorithm. It's a very commonly used one, as well as Blowfish. You also have DES and 3DES. Now, DES is probably still somewhat used, but is definitely an insecure algorithm to use. It's been compromised plenty of times in practice. But 3DES, what that does is it takes the DES algorithm and just repeats it three times, right? So it basically triple encrypts it with the DES algorithm. Okay. But if you ever see AES, so pretty much everything that you see, if you go look up, I can't think of a great example right now, but most of them use it. So if you go out and create some social media account somewhere and you look at the encryption method, encryption algorithm they use, they're probably going to say AES 256, right? That is arguably, hands down, the most common one ever used. If you do see AES 256, that is a very strong and trustworthy algorithm. Now for a little analogy about symmetric encryption, you know, and this is an analogy that I used in the video. Imagine you're creating a secret language, and you and your best friend are creating a secret language. But in order to understand that secret language, you have a key that associates it to the American alphabet, right? So you have to have that key, unless you're just a genius or Johnny Fife. You need that key in order to interpret that message in that new language that you created, right? But if you and Bob and Alice and Johnny all have that key, then all of you can interpret that language, right? So, but a bad actor could potentially intercept a message that you send using that new language you created. However, they're not going to be able to read it because they're not going to have the key to interpret it, right? To decipher it or decrypt it. So that is symmetric encryption. I'll pause there to see other thoughts before we move on to asymmetric encryption.
So I would say some of the benefits to symmetric encryption is it generally takes less computational power. So it works faster. In general. And so when you talk about things like, you know, just if you need to encrypt a file and then send it to somebody and have them, you know, securely and then have them decrypt it, you know, symmetric encryption is generally the preferred way. If you think of something like BitLocker or VeraCrypt or, you know, BoxCrypt or, you know, some of these other processes, that's just, it's a symmetric encryption. So wherever the, you know, wherever the same key, in other words, the same password, if you will, right, is provided to encrypt and decrypt, that's symmetric. And generally, again, you know, large data files, if you think of, you know, how BitLocker encrypts your entire disk, you know, same thing generally with your phone, right? You're encrypting the entire disk. Some Android, I think, still might do some file-based encryption, but it's the same concept, right? You're using one password called a key to encrypt and decrypt. And that happens pretty quickly. So asymmetric, which we'll get into next, is a little bit different. I think the biggest thing for that is the computational power is just so much less of a requirement for symmetric compared to asymmetric.
Yeah, those are great examples. And maybe we'll follow that same exact flow when we get to asymmetric. I'll go over it and then let you do that. I think that worked really well. But yeah, like you said, symmetric encryption. Symmetric encryption is commonly used either in conjunction with asymmetric or in situations like Sam talked about in depth about where you're not really, like operating system encryption, right? Or removable media encryption, encrypting devices and things like that, right? Where you're not needing that. There's a lot of examples, but that other examples where you're not really communicating with someone else, right? You're communicating with whatever device you're using, that kind of thing. But without further ado, we'll hop in. And thanks to everybody else that has joined so far. There have been quite a few that joined. Dean, Foodie, Samantha, everybody. Sagan Pool, welcome. Like I tell everybody on these spaces, they're generally not huge. So if you want to hop up and speak, and I think we have someone right now. You are welcome to hop up. Invite the person up here and join the conversation, ask questions, share extra input, whatever it is. Before I do move on, Foodie City, I believe I allowed you up. I saw that you requested. I don't see your speaker yet.
It says they're connecting.
They might have rugged accidentally.
Yeah, they might accidentally rug.
Good old Twitter doing its thing. Okay, so moving on to asymmetric encryption, and we'll kind of go through the definitions here and the differences, and then allow Sam to share his inputs and some examples. So asymmetric encryption is different. The biggest difference is symmetric encryption is using that single key we just talked about, but asymmetric is using two keys, right? Your public key and your private key. The private key is used for decryption, and the public key is used for encryption, right? So anybody in the world can have your public key, and only you have that private key, right? You don't give anybody that private key because then they can decrypt your messages. So in a very short explanation, that's really what asymmetric encryption is. So for example, SSHing or using OpenSSH to SSH into a Linux server or something like that, you're using asymmetric encryption with a public and a private key, right? That public key is sitting on the remote server and your private key is in your control, right? So you go to SSH, it authenticates by verifying that public key sitting on that remote server is associated to your private key and then allow you to authenticate and log in, for example, right? But it is used in other methods, and there's in a couple of slides from now, we'll talk about that. But the analogy for asymmetric encryption is imagine that you have a public seal, right? And anyone has this seal, but they have to use that seal in order to send you a message, right? So Alice writes a letter and seals the envelope with your seal and your public seal and sends it to Bob, or with Bob's seal and sends it to Bob. Bob has that private key or has the key to then open that seal and read the contents of that letter, right? So that is asymmetric encryption. And in my video that I did, I actually explained these analogies a little better. But for anybody that wasn't already here, I'm a little mentally distracted because after the space, I have to go deal with a water leak at my barn. And I found out like 2 minutes before the space. So I had to cut the water off and deal with that after. But anyway, in the video, I do describe those analogies a little bit clearer. But I think I did explain them correctly. So, I hope those help. Before I, So again, I just want to give those definitions and kind of what it is and the difference between symmetric encryption. And I'll turn it over to Sam if you have anything kind of like you do with symmetric encryption to add on to this.
Yeah, so I mean, as you said, right, so there's two keys. The interesting thing is for asymmetric to work, right, there has to be a communication that occurs to exchange keys. And so generally that happens through what's called, Diffie-Hellman key exchange. And that's where two parties, whether those again are people or software, whatever, but like two parties are saying, hey, I want to talk to you, right? And I'll talk to you, I'll talk back to you. And they have to exchange their keys without exposing their private key to the other person. And so it's this really complex process of a little bit of back and forth where, they go through this exchange. And ultimately, there's three keys in play, right? So there's the public key, which is a combination, sort of an amalgam of both of the private keys, so that they can provably show that, whatever, right? I encrypt something with my private key and this public key, and then I send it to you, and you can decrypt it with your private key and the public key. And by the public key, if both of those don't match, then you can't decrypt it, right? So just having one private key and a public key would not, you could decrypt part of the, one half of the message or whatever. Not one half of the message, sorry. You could one side of the message, which potentially could be enough, depending on what you want. Anyway, that gets into a little bit of other stuff. But yeah, so there's multiple keys involved. And it's that communication that has to happen. But because there is so much involved in both the key exchange and in the encryption and the amount of passes that are required for it, asymmetric encryption generally takes a lot longer. And the keys are usually a lot longer too, on average, right? I think 124 was the standard for a long time. I think 2048 is now kind of the recommended minimum, and 4096 is pretty standard. But to encrypt something with asymmetric requires a lot more computational power. And so it's generally, it's exponential based on the amount of data, the size of the data that you're encrypting. So it generally serves very well for smaller data and lower like compute power environments. I think years ago, right, phones probably would have fallen into that. Now I'm not sure, right, your average cell phone probably has almost as much compute power as your at least a laptop, the average laptop. So that's kind of it. I don't know. Hopefully that helped explain a little bit more. Again, going back to it, right, asymmetric is very computational power heavy. It takes longer. And usually when, if you do look at certain services where asymmetric encryption is used, it's typically, there's this kind of balance of, you could have something that's, I forget what is it, 80, RSA 81, I forget what the, what's 496 times two.
It's like 8181, I think. I don't know. I can't remember.
You could go all the way up there, but some of it becomes impractical just from the time it would take, let's say for an email, right? Like that's something that is often discussed in email, is that you can, you could always apply a longer key to encrypt something and have more complex algorithms, but then it's going to take a lot longer. And you know, so it's kind of this balance of what's reasonably safe. And we'll talk maybe a little about, well, we will talk a little bit about that when we get into like, oh wait, do we do a slide just for quantum?
We can add that in ad hoc. Yeah.
Yeah. Ad hoc at the end. Anyway, okay. I'll end there just for the sake of time. But yeah, that's asymmetric, computational, heavy. And it takes kind of this trustless exchange between parties through Diffie-Hellman or some other process.
Yeah, indeed. So the next part is kind of just an overview of the kind of the key points and kind of a recap. And I actually I have a different analogy now to kind of combine the two, right? And I could probably get a better example of an actual real-world application, but just a generic example or an analogy. But before I do, I'll just take a quick moment to hush up. And if somebody does have a question or anything to add, please interrupt and do that. But if not, then we'll just go ahead and continue.
Yeah, I had a quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm trying to grasp the asymmetric encryption. So that's something you'll usually not see really in blockchain, but more so like email exchanges and like personal accounts, like one-to-one interactions.
That's a good question. So asymmetric is used a lot in blockchains as well, right? So for instance, Cardano uses something called ED25519, which is an Edwards curve and one other one combined. Bitcoin and I think Ethereum uses something called ECDSA. And then something like Polygon uses another encryption algorithm or asymmetric algorithm called Schnorr's. So Schnorr's algorithm. So it is used. I'm pretty sure both of them are used. I'm pretty sure asymmetric and asymmetric are used, but most commonly asymmetric is used. Then, you know, and this is outside of the scope of the discussion tonight, hashing will be a future one, but hashing is also used very often in blockchain as well for encrypting that or for hashing the headers of blocks and things like that. Does that help, Foodie?
So what
or you can continue at, yeah, go ahead.
So as a developer, in Algorand, we use twisted elliptic Edwards curve, twisted Edwards curve, so the ED25519. So okay. What really happens is, yeah, there's the, and I'm sure you know, of course you know, I'm completely new to this. You'll take, trying to recall the script now. So you'll have a private key that's 32 bytes. It'll hash it and then put it on the curve to output a new public key that's 32 bytes. So you have the original before it's hashed and goes through the curve, and then the public, which is also 32 bytes, and the product of that. So in Algorand, for example, when I do like a group transaction, so it's basically a contract that I would sign with my private key and the other user would sign with their private key. And so the analogy confuses me with the Alice and Bob thing where they use the same key to open something. I think that's more Diffie-Hellman because the way I see it, it's a two-sided door with a lock on each side. And I unlock one door, I unlock my side, they unlock their side, and we open the door to this transaction that occurs, or like we both sign a contract. So I guess where I'm confused is how it's not that we're sharing a private key, it's that we're both using our own private keys to create something. And I don't see situations where we're using our private keys together or as one. Like, you know what I mean? You know where I'm going with the... I don't see a one door... I don't see them reading something with a private key that I gave them. It's something... I don't know. Now I'm lost.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll take a
go ahead.
Quick kind of stab at this, but I will admit, right, Macaroni's probably, so he fucks that accountant here, but Macaroni is probably a lot more competent on this than I. But so what you're describing is, right, like you're taking, it's asymmetrical in that you have two private keys, but then the confirmation of like how you're describing, right, you're signing with your private key, they're signing with their private key, and that transaction is taking the combination. And so the output of those two private keys is this sort of public key, right? Again, that can be shared with anyone. It just says yes, right? The only way to recreate this key is through the joined combination of the underlying private keys. Right. And that's how you can validate that, you know, or prove that transaction was created by those two private keys, because the only way to get the result of that transaction confirmation is through those two. No other two private keys could together combine and create that same output. Okay. I don't know if that helps. Yeah.
Does. I guess I have one last question just to end it. There's no security risk if you continuously do that with someone, right? Like you keep outputting, like two keys keep outputting a different public, you know, hashed public key over and over. There's no security risk in that. Like if someone analyzes all of those and then goes, oh, you know, this specific, it's just as secure as if you were generating a public key to begin with.
Correct. And Macaroni, correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, I mean, but no, that's correct. Like it's, there's no additive security risk to signing transactions like that, right? Because at the end of the day, there are ways to try to break it, but they're incredibly hard, right? And I would say incredibly hard, I mean, to the point where they're almost impossible to crack. So whether you sign one transaction ever and that's it, right? That public key is out there. For anyone to be able to still take that and derive what your private key is, you know, I mean, my dad could probably give you the mathematical answer to it. But yeah, I mean, it's just insanely unlikely. And even if, right, so that's like, so whether you do it with one person, you and I sign a transaction together and there's the output of our public key, if you will, like the cryptographic representation that we have both signed this together, and then you sign it with, Dean Zipak, who's in here. Then you sign another and another with all these other people. Like it does not make it easier to derive your key, because it's just mathematically it's impractical.
I think that they even the public
probable.
I think the new key that's generated for your joint signed, I think it even uses your public key. So it's not even two private keys creating a new public, it's two public keys creating a pub. So it's even more impossible, if anything. I could be wrong there, but thank you for answering the question to begin with. I'll let you guys continue.
No, great question.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And Foodie, in a few weeks we'll be doing a whole thing on strictly encryption and associated to blockchain technology, right? So you know, definitely trying our best to answer your question here. But that might be another good space for you to join, because it will specifically dive deeper into the topic. That topic specifically, right? We have a couple of series going on right now, and I'm mixing them in between different tools that people can use in to be more secure, and then the encryption one that we just started today. So just pay attention, and I'm happy to remember to remind you as well when we get to that topic, if that's the one that interests you, and we'll dig more into it. But, you know, yeah, there's just a lot to be had there. You know, I mean, symmetric, asymmetric, and then hashing functions are all used in blockchain for various purposes. But yeah, I hope that the knowledge that Sam shared with you and I shared with you does help to some degree. And like I said, we'll dig more into that. Sound good?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. We're just trying to do this in a very, and that's why luckily we'll have a space on the blockchain part. Just we're trying to walk through the basics of it, then walk through general common real world applications. And then my ultimate goal, the one I am excited about, is the one we just talked about, is the blockchain part of it. So that we can like draw a big picture and, you know, or take a puzzle and start putting it together, and at the end we'll have the whole thing together, hopefully. Maybe we won't, but hopefully we will. But yeah, okay. Let's see. Does anybody else have any other questions, or anybody wants to hop up? There's a reasonable amount of people in here. I'm actually kind of surprised. I thought this would be the topic that at least people would want to know about, but I'm happy that everybody is interested in this, because it's really good to know how encryption is helping you in your digital world, but you know, also how it's applying to you, mostly transparently, unless you're somebody like a developer or you know, coder, or, you know, web developer or anything like that.
I watched The Imitation Game last night. Ask me anything.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ask me anything. Indeed. Okay. So let me get back to this thing here. Hang on just a moment. So the analogy just taking a step back for a moment and getting back to kind of a broad understanding of encryption and applying asymmetric along with symmetric, right? So before I do that, symmetric and asymmetric are commonly used together for a lot of the reasons that we talked about earlier, and some of the things Sam mentioned about the speed, but also the difficulty, right? So asymmetric encryption has a much higher level of difficulty of cracking, if you will. However, because of simplicity or the ease of symmetric, the benefit there is the speed, right? So generally, they're used together. First, to take an asymmetric encryption, that process of that, to transfer the symmetric key, and then the symmetric key takes over for the you know, the future communication beyond that, right? So I'll just give this analogy to see if that helps anybody as well listening in. And this is very similar to the other analogies I've babbled on about. But if you take a box, right? So imagine you want to send your friend a package, right? You could take that package, you can put it inside a box and seal it with tape, right? You would then take that box and give it to a shipping company, and then they would deliver it to your friend, right? Now, the box is like the symmetric key. It's used to encrypt the package, and only your friend has the key to open it, right? So the shipping company is like the asymmetric key. So they have the public key, which they use to encrypt the package for you. Your friend has the private key, which they use to decrypt the package, right? Well, am I saying that wrong? I might even get my own analogy mixed up. Basically, you're transferring that via some asymmetric encryption, right? You have the private key. So Sam, you're welcome to rearticulate, because I do think I'm mixing this up. Not on purpose. I just think I'm fumbling my words. But basically, your asymmetric encryption, right? The public and private key, and it's used to transfer that box, right? But the box, the sealed part of it, is the symmetric key itself, right? I'm just trying to think of a better way to clarify that. If you have a different analogy or a different way of putting that together, please go ahead.
So I mean, I would almost say, like, so for symmetric encryption, if you think of it like a TSA lock, right? Or really any lock, at like physical lock, right? You have one key that locks the lock. Well, I guess really they unlock the lock, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's one key, and you may have multiple of those keys, but only that key, or a good lock picking set, is going to open that lock. And right, and so that's symmetric. It's one key. Whereas an asymmetric, and just to try to keep it sort of along the same lines, think of it like, you know, like a ultra high security environment, or, you know, where there are two keys required to open a door or something, right? Where it you know, it takes more than the one key, it takes both of the keys to actually turn the lock and open it. And I know that's maybe a little bit of a dumbed down way of describing it, you know, but that's kind of how I would think of it, right? It's like you have either one key or multiple keys. And to that, I would kind of say too, right? Like when you look at the difference between symmetric and asymmetric, and why asymmetric it's known, right, that it is a stronger encryption method, is because when you try to break the encryption, you're trying to break, you're really trying to derive the key used to encrypt it, right? Like, that is, at its simplest, that's what you're trying to do. You're not necessarily arguably trying to just, you know, reshuffle all of the little bits until they make sense. You're trying to derive the key that will take that ciphertext and produce text that is legible. And so when you have symmetric, you only have to derive one key, where asymmetric, you'll have to derive really two keys or multiple keys, in order to have the same result of being able to, you know, reconstruct that text. And there's also how many passes and stuff. But and I would say to that point, with symmetric especially, because there is only one key, but it goes for asymmetric in a lot of ways too, the length of the key that you use matters, right? So when you think of choosing, and I would take this as a simple way of describing it, is when you take a password and you apply it, right, that is your key. Now, depending on the actual bit required for the key, so if it's a, you know, RSA 4096, but your password is you know, not 496 or 4096 bits long, it'll extrapolate that into the appropriate size key through various methods. But choosing a longer key, password, if you will, right, makes a huge difference, because the amount of tries to extract that key is, you know, there's a lot more options before you can kind of do that.
Yeah, that was a good way of putting it, Sam. So there's another part to go back on the blockchain part as well, just to change gears for a moment, that I'll explain. But before I go any further, are there any other clarifying questions, or again, anything to add, or anybody have anything to share? Okay. I hope this is helping. This is, you know, I hope it's, you know, it's a challenging topic to break down and to help you understand what this is, right? So it might take, when I was figuring out encryption, it took me quite a few times of seeing it, using it, reading different analogies like I talk about tonight and different things to kind of get the concept of it, right? So if you are having a difficult time interpreting what we're saying tonight, I could just be giving you a bad way of understanding it, or just, you know, just continue hearing these things, and eventually one of these bits of the conversations will help it click to you, right? But before I do move on, Jarhead, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not sure what the next segment is about this, but I was kind of curious about if you could speak about it generally at some point. What would make a blockchain, and specifically Cardano, I don't want to say future-proof, but as future-proof as it can be until some disruptive technology like quantum computing or something comes into play. But that's a big topic, and I don't know if you can deal with that right now.
Well, I think Sam actually had some stuff to share on that. He alluded to it earlier, but, you know, quantum computing, that people have demonstrated in practice that quantum computing can, in fact, compromise elliptical curve cryptography algorithms, right? And I'm trying to get to my documentation here. So RSA, right, which most people in here, you may not know what that is, but RSA, but you probably heard the word, and ECC, right, elliptical curve cryptography. So RSA and ECC, such as ED25519, Schnorr, ECDSA, those things that we talked about already are used by a lot of the blockchains that we're familiar with, Cardano, Polygon, Ethereum, Bitcoin, so on and so on. All of them have their own encryption algorithms, right? But Schnorr, ECDSA, and ED25519 are the most commonly used ones, if you will. And in general practice, quantum computing has shown to be able to crack them, right? But that sounds bad, but this is kind of the thing that technology... This is just how technology works, right? A new technology is created, and while it poses risks, it also introduces the opportunity for increased security, right? So the thing is, I think I've heard Charles speak on this before, and the way that guy articulates things is just something that I aspire to be able to do one day. It's insane how he articulates answers. But he's talked about it before, but... You know, essentially, I mean, so Cardano, for example, using ED25519, as quantum computing grows, that is absolutely a risk for the technologies we're using. But we'll use quantum computing also to overcome those risks, right? But Sam, did you have you mentioned quantum earlier. Did you have anything specific on your mind to add on to that?
Yeah, I mean, on that note, it's definitely one of the things that's been discussed for many years, right? Is okay, you know, with quantum computing, how's that going to change things? And right, so it is. In my understanding, right, there are a lot of threats to, especially lower tier encryption. That quantum computing can pose. And ultimately, it's because in order to crack an encryption, to derive the private key or the key that encrypted something, it takes a ton of computational power to do that, right? I mean, it's crazy amounts. And so most of encryption is deemed safe or it's deemed outdated by an assessment of how much computational power would require to derive those keys and in what time frame. And, you know, if it's over a certain threshold, you know, generally measured in, you know, hundreds or thousands or millions of years, right, then it's deemed, you know, safe. But traditional computers traditionally, you know, they use traditional bits. And that bit can either be, it can be a one or it can be a zero, right? But it can't be both at the same time. And so the only way to increase the time to break encryption is you either give it more time, or you have to throw a ton more computational power into the mix, right? So you exponentially increase it. And you think of, like, that's the difference between, can I break your web password, you know, WP for, you know, your router? Can I break that with my personal computer versus, you know, do I need a supercomputer to do that, right? But the interesting thing with quantum computers is that the qubit can actually represent not only a one or a zero, it can represent both at the same time. And so it's just, you know, not infinitely, but it's significantly more efficient in how many tries it can do in the same amount of time as a traditional computer. And so, so that drastic increase in efficiency for testing and possible answers, you know, goes up. So, you know, so what might take, you know, I don't know, you know, hundreds of bits and cores on a traditional computer, right? It might be possible in just a small handful of qubits in a quantum computer. So in other words, it just drastically reduces the amount of time to do that. From what I have seen, I mean, like standards like, you know, RSA 4096 and, you know, is generally still so complex that even your average, you know, I say average, but like even the quantum computers that are being played around with now at Google and at IBM, you know, they're still having significant difficulty. It's not like it's just automatically gone. You know, maybe at some point that could be a broader concern. What I would also say on that is kind of a little bit of a comforting side, right, is also look at, excuse me, at the likelihood that anyone would get it. Right. You're really talking, you know, nation states, primarily, or, you know, like significantly resource heavy companies that would have to point this at a specific problem, to do it. So, you know, so there could be threat down the road, and I don't know, right. Maybe that's in the next 3 to 5 years or 10 years, that there could be a lot more, concern about that. But again, you know, you're talking about a very few number of people who would even have large enough quantum computers, you know, not just, you know, a couple qubits, you know, but those that have, you know, hundreds or, you know, more or larger, quantum computers, hundreds of qubits or larger quantum computers, right? They're going to be a very small number. And they kind of, it still would have to single you out to do that, which, you know, is the simplest way I would say it is if that's a concern, right, that a nation state would do that, then, right, there's probably other aspects you'd want to take into it. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of it. I don't know. Maybe that was very confusing. Qubits much more efficient at guessing, you know, than a standard computer. But I think we're still a long way off before the best encryption we have now is truly at risk. And you know, I'm sure that encryption will also get better.
Yeah, we are quite a ways off from that. Absolutely, yeah. Mixed Greens, you hopped up to speak while we were going over that. What's up? Do you have a question?
What's going on? Really, I'm just like very interested in like encryption. So I'm popping up as of right now. I don't have much to say, but I am on the train. So hopefully I don't lose service and like get rugged. But, you know, I'm up here to like listen because like I'm super interested in encryption, and I probably am going to have questions and concerns, or maybe even statements in the next few. But like, it's probably loud in my background, but I'm just listening right now.
That's okay. I appreciate it, Mixed Greens. We're actually going to wrap up pretty soon. And for the people that have heard us for six times already, I apologize, but I have a water leak at my barn, so I'm going to have to close the space up anyway here momentarily to go handle that. But yeah, so Mixed Greens. So if you want, this is recorded. You're welcome to listen to it. I also on you can find this on my Epochsec account I'm talking about right now on I'm Holy Macaroni, by the way. But you can look at the YouTube channel and the video I just posted it Thursday where I talk about this topic as well. So if you want to watch that later, you're welcome to, and maybe that'll help you. If you have any questions, you can reach out to us and we'll do our best to answer them for you. Also, for the people that have heard this a few times already, my apologies. But Mixed Greens, we're going to be talking about this topic in future discussions in the next coming month or two. We'll be breaking down different parts of this in terms of real-world use cases, such as, yeah, I've said this before, but operating system encryption and other things, so you can kind of get a better picture on how it applies to you. But also then another topic separately dedicated to its own segment will be blockchain and how encryption relates to that in terms of your wallet, the seed phrase and what it does and how it uses encryption to create your public and private keys and transactions and what are done in blocks, such as hashing functions are used for the headers. We'll be talking about that as well. So all that good stuff. So yeah. I just rambled on about that.
Now we
No,
should.
when is the next one? Because I need to definitely be present for that one.
So every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern or 10 p.m. UTC, we talk about different security topics. Next one, I've got them both planned. Next week will either be hashing functions or back to different tools you can use. So join that one because that will probably be helpful to you as well. But then the following week, we'll definitely be getting back into encryption. So I just every other week I'll be flipping back and forth. So yeah, just join us on Sundays and we'll be going through those absolutely.
What time did this one start?
6 p.m. Eastern or 10 p.m. UTC. I don't know what time zone you're in, but
I'm Eastern, so
okay,
y'all been
6 p.m.
going on for
Eastern.
about 1 hour and 15 minutes, basically.
Yeah, we usually go on for about 2 hours or so, but unfortunately, I have problems to deal with, so ending early tonight. But yeah, we usually go for at least an hour, if not 2 hours, every Sunday or every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Yes, sir.
All right, that works. So, I should be here next week.
Okay.
I'll make a reminder for me to be here because I
Yeah,
do
make a
want to talk about
reminder.
encryption.
Yeah, make a reminder if for some reason something gets in the way and you can't join, you're welcome to reach out to me and I'll point you to the content that'll help you. Either way, we'll be here and if you can join, that would be awesome. Yeah. Okay. Does anybody else have? I was going to dig into the whole seed phrase and private and public key stuff, but I'm going to save that for the blockchain week. But does anybody else have any other questions? If you want to hop up to speak, please do. I'll hang tight in case somebody does have a question right now that we can answer. Sam, if you have anything else to add or Jarhead or driving, please go ahead while we wait to see if anybody else has any other questions.
I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, for today, hopefully it was value added as far as, a very high level kind of overview of encryption, asymmetric and symmetric. This one wasn't very much in the weeds. That the goal, I think, is to cover a lot of those more in depth or more pointedly. In the future ones, right? And hashing, that'll be a fun topic. We'll learn about a little salt, a little bit of pepper, a little bit of birthday and collision. I would say we almost need to probably have like the disclaimer for this particular series of, it's about to get complicated. right? Because most, I mean, you know, most of our topics are, I think, less just mind melting. You know, the encryption gets pretty fun, but easily can get kind of confusing too for a lot of things.
Watch Holy Macaroni's videos on YouTube. Give him a like and a subscribe on there, and let him fix his roof tonight. And thanks for the nice overview, and I gave you a little driving tip that, you know, one key to fit your car, and then there's a bunch of functions in your car. So I'd love to get into the rest of them, but go fix your roof, and thanks, man. Great job. And vote EPOCSEC and Catalyst, I assume.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. That's a good analogy, driving. And maybe the next space when we go over more encryption stuff, we'll give you some time to walk through those. I think that I read some of that, and I think that'd be great. And yeah, and like Sam said, right? A lot of what we do at EpochSec is less mind melting, like he said, because our goal really is to help the majority of people out there to be just more safe online, right? Practice safe, good security, safe security, and the different tools and thought processes and different things out there you can do and be aware of, right, to avoid getting compromised. But this is definitely going to be one of the more complicated topics we get into. But, you know, I thought it was very valuable for people to just at least have you know, I'm not expecting anybody to go away from these spaces and know how to go out there and start explaining elliptical curve technology, you know, or cracking encryption algorithms. But if you can at least understand when you're navigating the digital world, how it applies to you and how it's being transparently used to keep you safer online, I think that's the major goal of this series right here. But yeah, so again, I hope this helped. Please join the next space. We'll continue trying to break this down in a simple way using different things that you can relate to. And yeah, like Driving said, I have my YouTube channel. All you have to do is go look up on YouTube, EpochSec. You'll see my account on there. It's the exact same logo. Watch that video, see if it is helpful to you. Take note of this space if you have any questions. As you think about this, that you think we didn't clarify or articulate well, or you just didn't understand, please let us know. Let me know, and I'll definitely add that to the list to find better ways to clarify that, right? My goal is not to listen to me talk, it's to help you understand, right? So if I'm not doing that, I will find five different ways to explain it if that's what it takes to help you out. I don't mind. But anyway, thank you everybody for joining. I am going to close up now. Hope everybody has a great Sunday and take care.
Yeah, again, thanks for everybody for joining, and thank you, Macaroni, for having me on.
Oh, and I'm going to say more because the draft hasn't put in yet, but there is some EpochSec stuff coming in Catalyst. So thank you, Driving, for mentioning that, and we'll be sure to share that out as soon as it's submitted. And yeah, thank you for your time, everybody, and I hope it was helpful. And thank you, Sam, for your help as always, and everybody for your questions. And we're going to close up now. Have a good evening.